Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 143, as we continue our positional previews for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. We head to the outfield, do part one of the outfield on this episode. It'll be the top 15 outfielders plus some late targets, and we'll do 16 through 30 next week, so on and so forth, to get you ready for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. You can find myself on Twitter at BDIntric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, my friend?
Doing well, Bubba. More and more projections are coming online. You know, we got steamers up there. We got the Bat X and the Bat, and we got Razzball, which is, you know, Rudy Gamble's take on steamer, which is also helpful. So a lot of projection systems coming through. So that excites me because I feel like that's the start of my baseball season this year.
Yeah, it's over at Gaining the Edge, Simeone, Michael Simeone, SP streamer. He's kind of taking your approach this year where he didn't really want to make any rankings and do too many drafts until he got projections out. Now once the bat came out, he started using Rudy's deal. He's starting to put stuff together, and he started to get the itch, kind of like how you are. A lot of similar thoughts, it seems like you guys have in, with the, you know, projections and whatnot. So it is go time. ATC is supposed to come out on Wednesday the 18th. That's what the latest tweet said. So we'll have by the time
you're listening to this, yep, exactly. Probably.
Most likely it should be dropped out. And then obviously there'll be updates because even Derek Cardi, Cohen, Ariel already said that there's going to be more adjustments because they haven't even factored in the rule changes. Toronto's changing their ballpark. There's a few other things that are taking place, but I don't think anything too drastic. Just something to keep in mind. There will be alterations as the draft season goes on. But let's get into the outfield. Let's talk about the outfield. Everyone talks about how it drops off a cliff so fast. Five outfielder leagues, 12-team league, that's 60 outfielders, 15-team leagues. That's another, 75 outfielders. So it gets deep real, real quick. How are you approaching the outfield position this year?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think generally my approach, what I'm trying to do is kind of what you just articulated, is really trust the projections and that process. And so with that in mind, I think that there's obviously some real talent towards the top that people have talked about. But I do think that there's kind of little pockets of value here and there, or perceived value, you know, when I'm taking a look at the projection versus where people are with ADP. There's a really nice little group, you know, between 50 and 100, actually even like 50 and, you know, 120 or so. There's a few players in there that look like they're pretty good. So I think, you know, I'll maybe sound like a broken record by the time we get to the end of these initial previews, but what I'm really trying to do is identify places where I can make up some value. And so maybe that means waiting on outfield a little bit and taking some of these kind of later round guys where there's a little bit more volatility in the projection, but the projections show that based on where they're going right now and what they should or could contribute, that they might make a lot of sense. And I think there's some higher upside guys going later on, right? Who, sometimes you have to take a early risk you know, to attack some of that upside. And I think there's some guys going on later that, that I'm just getting distracted by Nick.
Yeah. Nick Pollock's having a lot of fun in the YouTube chat, by the way, folks. So yeah.
Yeah. He said Toby looks like a man made for the winter. And I think you're right. You're absolutely right, Nick. I've never actually received a compliment that has felt so good as what you just said. There's never enough firewood, Nick. There's never enough firewood. You got to keep on chopping. So I think there's some profiles later on that are really interesting, like that could really hit big or flame out. But when there isn't a really high draft pick associated with that, I think it's a little bit more interesting. So I think there are different ways to approach it. I think there's definitely little chunks there where, you know, maybe I'll be targeting a couple outfielders, you know, in that ADP range of like 50 to 120, something like that. I kind of dig that right there. And then later on in the draft. So I think it's some of those like middling guys, those kind of guys in the middle where there's just not a lot there necessarily, but there's definitely some guys to get. That was all over the place because we were interrupted by this beautiful, you know, person. Dissertation of how lovely I am in the chat. So
yeah, Toby gets easily blushing, and when it comes to Nick Pollock, that's his Dairy Queen squeeze. So you got to watch out there. And Nick's already trying to be like, "Hey, are you coming to see me pretty soon?" He's already putting in the moves in the chat. So
wow,
watch out for Nick Pollock there.
The one nice thing about summer is ice cream.
Yep,
that's for sure.
There you go. Yeah, for me in the outfield, it's kind of like I prefer to get at least one or two of the early, but like top 30 guys if I can. But what I will say to the confusion, like the drop off people talk about, it drops off from like your, you know, quality guys, but there's still tons of value potential, as Toby said. But the one thing is, if you're going to stream a position potentially, there's always moving parts in the outfield from week to week. It's like, hey, you know, this guy's got a 4-game series and he faces like 5 lefties out of 6 games or something. All of a sudden, this guy has become a valuable streaming option that you didn't have before. You get a lot more of that in the outfield than you other positions. Let's put it that way. Because a lot of 4th and 5th outfielders on a team. So you could use that angle if you want to wait, try to like, you know, hit some darts late. If it doesn't work out, play the streaming game, go from there. It's quote unquote a little easier, I'd say, than other positions to stream as the season goes on. But that'd be my two options there if I had to go there. But I like to get at least one or two because there's a lot of good 5-category studs that we're going to talk about that I'm a big fan of early on that helps if you want to take some value at some other positions at a later time in the draft. All right, we're going to use NFBC DC ADP since December 25th, Christmas. When I did this outline, there was 11 drafts completed. Now there's 13. So still next week, we'll kind of shorten it down again to try to keep it to the 10 or 11 range. But they're starting to pump out drafts, which is good to see as draft season gets going here in mid-January. But we'll do the top 15, like I said, ADP, and then we'll do some deeper shots. The top ADP guy as of last night is Mr. Ronald Acuna Jr. This time last year, Toby was like, hey, I don't know if he's worth taking because, you know, the injury, how many is he going to run? He still was pretty darn good when all things were said and done with Mr. Acuna.
He just didn't do anything else.
Ran way more than people thought. That's the beautiful thing of Ronald Acuna Jr. So people are buying back in. You know, we talked about before his injuries a couple of years ago. This is a 40-40 caliber type guy, at worst 30-30. I think it's a pretty solid floor you get with him. I expect the power to bounce back. I would say that much. I'm a big fan of what we got from Mr. Acuna coming up here. So what's your thoughts on Ronald Acuna Jr. this season?
Yeah, I think it's just another example of how much smarter people are now. You know, when you have access to all these things, like me, I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll be able to get Acuna, you know, like later on and, you know, like later on in the first round because he didn't hit for power this year. But people see it was a bit of a fluke. You know, he had his career home run per fly ball is 21.9%, which includes last year. Before then, his lowest total ever was 21.1, and then he had a 12.8%, which obviously, you know, there's some of that is the impact of the ball, but 44 barrels and only 15 home runs. So an incredibly low number there, like 33% barrel to home run rate. So lack of luck there. The max exit velocity is awesome. Like everything's really good. Everything looks really good. He got unlucky on home runs. Probably got unlucky as well when it comes to runs and RBI, just from a per plate appearance basis. So I think all signs point to good. The ground ball rate spiked dramatically last year, but you know, again, I think he was battling injuries, so I would expect that to get close back closer to where it has been throughout his career. Closer to 40%, excuse me. Woo. I'm really boring myself even here. So I think he's great. If you look at, you know, the projections love him. He is the number one player in my rankings. Yeah. Based on his projections. And now I've incorporated a few more projection systems into there. So they've changed since last week, but they still all love Acuña.
Yeah, there's not much not to love with Ronald Acuña Jr. Like he was battling injury, as you mentioned last year. I'm expecting things to get kind of back to status quo. You could kind of pencil in a 265, 270 average, a 30 plus upside. Love it. Absolutely love it. Going to be hit at the top of a very good Braves lineup. So you don't have to go too deep into this. It's a nice, I don't call it a bounce back. It's more like you said, people are just smart enough to realize like, hey, this isn't who he was. He's still young. He's going to be just fine. I'm all aboard that. I'm okay being wrong if he's not. If he's really something, I'll be wrong because the ceiling he brings to the table is going to be outstanding. The second outfielder off the board is a very exciting young player. Again, it's a trend we have here towards the top of the opposite position, and that is Julio Rodriguez of the Seattle Mariners. Rookie campaign, 28 homers, 25 steals, 284 average, was just plain out outstanding. Kind of slowed down a bit in the second half. That's something to kind of keep in mind. There was a little bit of a pullback because he was just so good out the gate. Still a great season. Not a lot of complaints there. But to me, he's definitely just behind Acuña for me.
Yeah, he's very good as well. There's projections don't like him as much. Ranked 13th, but you know, right at $29 about. So projection doesn't like where he's going right now in drafts, but you can see the upside clearly. You know, he's got room to grow into that potentially with some skill development, like increased contact or better plate discipline potentially. You know, the one thing I'll say is I think the major question mark is around that batting average. 345 BABIP, you could clearly see why a guy like him might have a higher BABIP than average, but we don't have a long kind of history or track record to kind of tell us. So the projections see that going down a little bit, I think, which probably accounts for, you know, that lower projection. So he's fine. But I mean, you know, you're starting off with a 25-25 guy with, you know, a good batting average. So I think it's nice. I probably wouldn't go him, but I can see why people would.
Yeah, it's fun because like I was a part of that first DC that we were drafting before the season was even over, like a bunch of delinquents. And like the biggest talk was should J-Rob be number one? And there was a lot of people saying, sure, like there's no argument against it. And that's the funny thing about early drafts and the more research you do and projections you look at and other things, it's like still an amazing player. Wouldn't mind if he fell to me in a draft, but there's my keyword fell to me in a draft. I'm not reaching for him where other people will reach for him. I think he's still a great player. He'd probably have to be like 6 or 7 for me because there's the Acuñas, the J-Rams, probably even have Judge ahead of them. I honestly think I'd rather have Kyle Tucker personally. That's me. It's just there's a lot of other situational plays to go there, even Trey Turner potentially. But it's a real interesting dynamic with J-Rod. I got nothing against the kid. I think he'll be very, very good. Just he's going to be a little too rich for my blood, I think, because most people will have him higher than me in drafts. The third outfielder off the board, and you know, at one point was like the first outfielder off the board, ADP of 5, is Aaron Judge, coming off the 62 home run, 311 average, 133 runs, 131 RBIs, 16 stolen bases, just video game numbers from Aaron Judge. And the bugaboo most of us have always had with Aaron Judge is health. Well, the last 2 years, 157 games, 148 games, over 633 at-bats each or plate appearances each season. That's a big boost. And we've always known if he's healthy, he's an amazing hitter. He stayed healthy last 2 years. So now he's starting to move up draft boards. Seems a little more reasonable. I'm interested. I still get nervous. I still get very nervous with Aaron Judge. What's your thoughts on Judge in the 2023 season?
Yeah, the projection that I have likes him. Ranked 3rd, currently ADP around 5. So you're getting a little bit of positive value according to the projections. You know, everything went right for him last year. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. You look across the board and like every single thing, you know. So when you start to scale it back, you know, fewer home runs and all those things, things start to wilt away a little bit. But then you look at the health piece, right? It's like, as long as he stays healthy, the worst season he's had with at least 600 plate appearances is 287 with 39 home runs, six steals, 89 runs, and 98 RBI. Now, if you're drafting him here, you want a little bit more than that, but you don't need that much more than that, you know? No. And so I can definitely see taking Judge, here. It's all a factor of health, I think. There's obviously the roster construction considerations around steals, but he's not crushing you in that standpoint. And, you know, home runs being of similar value to steals at this point in time, you know, with the game that we have. The major question, I mean, some might even call it a triple dagger question, is about the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, which ball are they throwing him? You know, are they throwing him the Aaron Judge special bouncy edition, you know, that they've been throwing and that Garrett Cole was throwing last year? Like, is that what they're going to do? Are they going to have a little special ball for the Yankees so that they can hit a lot of home runs and people will cheer in the stadium, you know? I don't know. Probably not. But I think Judge is a perfectly fine, if not very good, you know, pick where he's going right now.
Yeah, the longer it's like the opposite of J-Rod for me. The longer the draft season's gone on, the more I've been like digging in and kind of being like, okay, I can live with Aaron Judge as a top five pick. I can sit there and be like, okay, the fact that I always struggle in power, well, even if he's down obviously from 62, 50 is reasonable, 45 is reasonable. That still puts you ahead of the game like real quickly. So like, would you rather go Aaron? Like, this is my dilemma in my head. It's like, do you want to go Aaron Judge early first round? Or do you want to force yourself to take like a Pete Alonso in the second round? Pete Alonso is very good too. I have nothing against Big Meat Pete, but I think I want Aaron Judge in that scenario. Now, the fun part is, do you want to go Aaron Judge or Jordan Alvarez? We'll talk about that in a minute, but that's where it gets a little more intriguing for me. The fourth outfielder off the board that we will talk about is Kyle Tucker. 30 home runs, 25 steals last year, only hit 257. I'm expecting that to go up big time. The guy's just a beast. It'd be nice if he ever hit in a quality spot in the order consistently. That'd be a plus. That's like a broken record by now. He still produces when he hits fifth, and he's probably going to still hit fifth because, you know, why would you put him in the three hole or something to make him very productive? Who knows? But I think he's still an amazing player. He's what people want Juan Soto to be. That's who Kyle Tucker is. And I think even if it ever clicks, he's a 30-30 guy someday. But at worst, you're getting 30-20, which is pretty darn good. I think you're going to get that on a regular basis. So I love Kyle Tucker. So I'd almost take him over J-Rod just for the consistency factor. I know what I'm going to get from Kyle Tucker, where J-Rod, it's only the second year. Like, there's a lot of things that can go up and down for the kid. So I love me some Kyle Tucker. What about you?
Yeah, I loved Kyle Tucker too. I just, you know, the projections still say it's not like a quote unquote value pick. Not that you're really looking for value picks at this point. It has him ranked 10th and ADP at 5, you know, so he's negative 5, but he's a $30 player, $30+ player. You know, I just love the skills. You know, great borderline elite contact rates, you know, hits for power. The BABIP last year was incredibly low. So, you know, we all know the story. So that probably gets a little bit of a boost up, you know, maybe not to the 294 of 2021, but I think he's going to be really good. And I have no issue grabbing him here in the first round either. I think, you know, I think he's going to have one of those years. He's going to have a year sometime where it's just
MVP type stuff.
Just unbelievable, you know? So, and maybe that's this year. And I haven't taken a look at roster resource yet to see where they're projecting that he's going to hit. But that has always been kind of his challenge, right? Is that he's hitting sixth or seventh in the lineup. He's back to sixth. Yep. At some point he'll be able to overtake Michael Brantley in the two hole, but, or, you know, Bregman could overtake Brantley and he could hit three or, you know, whatever. But I think that's the major, you know, little caveat there, but he's provided really good production the last 2 years in doing that. So I got no problems with it.
The fifth outfielder off the board, aforementioned Juan Soto, who we all love, OBP machine, But what a rough year for him. I tweeted out some splits between the Nationals and when he went to the Padres, where he was even worse last season. He still hit his, you know, his home runs. He still hit 27 homers, only stole six bags, which you kind of expect. 93 runs with only 62 RBIs. And at first I'm thinking, oh, that's because he was with the Nats. No, he got more RBIs than the Nats than the Padres. And yes, he played more games. I'm not stupid, but it was that bad. 242 average, the BABIP dropped exponentially. But just a lot of metrics that make you confused with Soto. He was just off last year. He's probably hurt a little bit, but I'm not worried about him. Let's put it that way. It's Juan freaking Soto. But it was a rough year last year. A very bad year, but he's going to be in a great Padres offense. I like Tucker more because Tucker runs. Soto's not running anymore. He's just not running. Outside of that, they're very similar players to me. Honestly, they don't strike out a ton. Soto walks a little more. But give me Tucker's ceiling on the stolen base department. Other than that, Soto's still a beast. It's just it's getting tougher and tougher to love him because he's definitely not running anytime soon.
Yeah, I think that Soto, I agree. I'm not very interested in Soto, especially where he's going. He is the 18th ranked player going at an ADP of 10. I think the challenge with Soto, I mean, I do think, like you mentioned, the BABIP was abnormally low last year. I think that will come back, but I do think that he has a few things working against him. As you mentioned, he did get traded to the Padres, and while it's a good offensive lineup, it is really tough for left-handed hitters. Power-wise, left-handed hitters struggle in Impetco or whatever it's called now. I don't even know what any stadium's named anymore. And so I think that's one thing to factor in. The batting average obviously coming up with the low BABIP, I think, but he's still got that ground ball propensity. You know, even last year, despite having his second lowest ground ball rate, you know, he still wasn't able to really get to that next level of power that you want to have. You know, if you're not getting steals with your first round draft pick. So I'm kind of steering clear of him. I think there's a little bit of a bounce back. The projections are all thinking the same thing as well. And so the question is bounce back to what? And I'm not sure that his ceiling is in his current context is as high. And he also the new ball also hurts him because of the opposite field and center field tendencies with his power. So yeah, I'm steering clear of him, but you know, he could be great.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100% on that one. It's just tough to buy into the first round for the Soto tag. The sixth outfielder off the board was one Yordan Alvarez, who back-to-back years now, he's produced 37 home runs, 95 runs, 97 RBIs this past year with a 306 average. He's just a pure hitting machine, walked even more this year, struck out less. BABIP was the same. It was just the dude's a beast. There's really no sugarcoating it. It's just a matter of stay healthy. He stayed healthy this past year. Keep DHing him. Don't put him in the outfield for the knees. I think he's amazing. I think he's a guy that could put a judge-like season together. I don't know if 62, 63, but I could see him hitting 50 someday. Yordan's that good. Like the way he hits the ball so hard. I'm a big, big fan of Yordan Alvarez. If you can get steals elsewhere, if you're comfortable in that, I think he's a great point to draft at this point in the draft.
Yeah, I got no quibbles with what you said. I think he's incredibly good. The outfield position eligibility really helps him a lot. He's an absolute stud. The one thing that I'll say, and again, this is just like, you know, quibbling with nothing, is, you know, his K rate was much lower than it had been in previous seasons, about 4% lower, despite him having a pretty similar contact rate to what he generally had. You know, he did walk more a little bit, but still doesn't account for it. So I think there's a little bit of a give there. But again, the projection systems are kind of banking that in as well, which is one of the reasons why it's good to trust projection systems, because they tend to do that in the spreadsheet. You know, they have him 28th. Ranked 28th.
Wow.
ADP of 12. So the...
It's not good for the spreadsheet game.
The spreadsheet would say no dice. It would say don't go Yordan where he's going right now. And I'm a man who trusts his spreadsheet.
Yes, so. You do. So that means I'll get Yordan and you won't. So it'll be fun.
It will be.
All right. The seventh outfielder off the board is, I think, a guy that needs to get a little more love than he has been getting in recent years is Mookie Betts. It feels like all these young outfielders are passing him up, and I get it. They're pretty awesome. And Betts isn't running as much as he used to. He had 12 steals last year, which is the most he's had since 2019, where he was a perennial, like, you know, double, like 20 plus guy there for a while. But he had 35 home runs, which is the most he's had in his entire career. So maybe a step back there. The one thing you know he's going to do, he's going to drive in runs. He's going to score a ton of runs. He's over 100 runs scored in five of the last six full seasons. Hits for a decent average. Actually, was down compared to usual last year. Going to be hitting towards the top of that Dodgers lineup. He's got an ADP right now of 11.15. I think he's a really, really strong play. I think he's – safe's always a horrible word to say, but when it comes to like back into the first round, if you want to take an outfielder that's going to get you five categories, or at least four and a half categories – there ain't nothing wrong with Mookie Betts. And I think he's a really strong play. It seems like every draft season, as the season goes on, he kind of falls back in the round. Yeah, and so we'll see how it goes this year. But I love Mookie Betts. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Mookie's really solid across the board. Nothing overwhelming, nothing spectacular, but except for the run totals. The run totals are spectacular. But very good. Very good, very balanced. I got nothing super negative to say about Mookie at all. You mentioned that he did have a career high in home runs last year. He also had his second highest barrels per plate appearance, which is pretty impressive for a guy, you know, I say his age, like he's old, but he's 30. He's just been around for so damn long. So yeah, I think Mookie's totally reasonable and fine. He's good. The spreadsheet doesn't love him. Story of the day, rank of 21, ADP of 12. So if you're looking for values, quote unquote values, according to the spreadsheet, early outfield is not the place to go. But do you believe the spreadsheet? It's what we all got to ask ourselves all the time.
Well, just realize if you draft with Toby, you need to get early outfielders because he's going to have all the other ones as values later, and you're never going to get them is what it comes down. Or you're going to have to fight for them. I don't know if you want to fight a lumberjack. It's going to be tough.
Oh, dude, you don't want to mess with this, especially a lumberjack in spring when I'm going to be doing drafts. In March.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, so just watch out.
Well, I mean, you know, I get a little grumpy when the winter's ending. You know, so look out.
When the ice melts, so does Toby's patience. So watch out.
You got
All right. The eighth outfielder off the board is Fernando Tatis Jr. We talked about him last week. There's like tons of potential there if you want. He's still got that ADP around 19. I imagine that creeps into the first round sooner than later. So do you have anything to add? We hit on him pretty much heavily last week.
Yeah, nothing to add there. You know, the only thing that I'd say on him is, you know, there was the great podcast that Rob DiPietro did where he had Phil and Steve and Jeff and Tanner. And one of the things that they talked about pretty extensively was, you know, not having to take these risks early on. You know, so even though Tatis Jr. appears, he seems like, oh, man, in my spreadsheet, he is a shortstop, so I have to change what I'm looking at here. So he is the sixth ranked player, and his ADP is 19. So you would look at that, and you'd be like, oh, man, you got to go with this guy. You got to go with this guy because the spreadsheet says it, right? But at the same time, I'm a human being. I'm not a spreadsheet. And I know that there's risk. Yeah. I know that there's risk. Or look at that, Rob DiPietro. I say his name and he shows up. He shows up. I mention his name and he's there. And so he's in the chat, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you listening to the podcast afterwards, Rob DiPietro is in the chat. So I think that like, yes and no. Spreadsheet loves him. Common sense doesn't. Probably split the difference, which means there's probably players that I like more. That I feel a little bit more comfortable taking at this point in time.
All right, then let's go to the ninth outfielder off the board. And this one was so much fun when I looked at his numbers a week ago for an article I wrote at Fantasy Pros. That's Mike Trout, ADP of 22. And it's always like, oh, Mike Trout doesn't stay healthy. Mike Trout doesn't do this. He's going to kill your team. Let me explain this to you. Yes, he didn't stay healthy. He only played 119 games last year. It's not great. he's still at 283 with 40 home runs, 85 runs, and 80 RBIs. Like the runs and RBIs, you'd want a little more for. Like I think we're given that. We know he's not going to steal. Like you're not drafting him to steal bags, but he's still at 40 jacks and hit 283 in 119 games. I'm still concerned about his health at all times, just because that's who Mike Trout is. But he, like, you know, we're talking about taking a chance with Tatis. Trout's right in that boat too. If he somehow puts together 130 to 140 games, like watch out type situation. And now you're not paying as much of a premium as you have in years past. Like even with the question marks, he was still going in the first round. Now you're getting him in like mid second round. If you look like at his maxes and mins, it's 18 to 28, almost the end of round two in certain situations. I'm a lot more intrigued with Mike Trout. Still haven't clicked the button on Mike Trout yet, but looking at what he actually did last year, I'm a little more intrigued. What are your thoughts on Trout? I'm guessing the spreadsheet doesn't like much either.
I got big news. Spreadsheet likes Mike Trout.
Oh, look at this.
Spreadsheet likes Mike Trout. You don't want to know who I blame. I blame the Bat X, because the Bat X loves Mike Trout. Loves Mike Trout. Five more home runs than Steamer. Eight more RBI than Steamer.
It's a heck of a stat line. 152 games too.
13 point batting average lean for the Bat X. That said, even the Bat X batting average of 269, Mike Trout has not hit lower than 281 in any season with any number of plate appearances since 2011, when he hit 220 as a rookie. So it just gives you a sense that, yeah, that it's good for Mike Trout. I think you're in the same dilemma as the Tatis Jr., where you're like, you can't stay healthy. Is this a consistent thing? You know, and maybe you got to just be like, there are other guys that I could pick here where it's safer and they're also values. So I think that's the question too, is relative value. I think that's one thing that's important for a lot of our decisions we make throughout a draft, is trying to determine relative value. And in an uncertain future, I mean, really, when I think about life, I think about how do I define relative value in
We're all in an uncertain future.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah. God. Bye-bye.
I want to talk about a guy that was Rookie of the Year last year, Michael Harris II. And he put together a great 297, which everybody drools about, 19 homers, 20 stolen bases, 114 games. You look at the projections, the average drops as kind of expected, but he's still about a 2020 guy. Now the question is, do you want to pay an ADP of 27 for him? He's gone as low as 42. That's a little more of a conversation worth having. But you're basically paying back into the second round for a guy like Michael Harris, who, to me, I see some similar profiles going a little farther behind him in drafts that we've seen do it more than once. Don't dislike Michael Harris, but it seems like some people like him much more than me. What say you about Michael Harris II?
Yeah, the spreadsheet hates him. Spreadsheet hates Michael Harris II. You know, I thought his name was Michael Harris, and that the two was what I was supposed to multiply his stats by in order for him to be a value on my spreadsheet. I thought I was supposed to do it. He's 46 on the spreadsheet. He's 25 in his ADP for Michael Harris. So the spreadsheet doesn't like him, number one. Let's see what we got. So he had 19 homers, 31 barrels. That's decent. But he had a really high ground ball rate, 56.2%. Home run per fly ball at 22.9. BABIP at 361. So I think what is probably being baked into this is a decent amount of a regression. The plate skills, I would call his plate discipline Michael Harris, the 41.7% O-swing. And then his contact rate is actually below league average as well. So, guys, let's settle it down on Michael Harris the second. All right, let's dial it back. All right. All you people drafted Michael Harris the second, dial it back two notches. Okay. Two notches on the Michael Harris, the two.
Toby's feeling some Michael Harris hate on this pod. So this will be fun. This is good right here. The 11th outfielder off the board, we talked about him a few weeks back, is Dalton Varsho, the new Toronto Blue Jay. Obviously a catcher who we love at catcher. That's why he's going so early here. But he's proven to be valuable in the outfield as well. But you're probably not rostering him to play the outfield if you draft him early. Any other thoughts on Dalton Varsho that we didn't hit on before?
Yeah, you know, I've got an interesting strategy point on this one. I think you should draft Dalton Varsho and start him in the outfield. I don't know if you've seen the new Blue Jays outfield, but it's cavernous. Yes. It's cavernous, you know. And if you put him at catcher, I don't know who's going to play center field on your fantasy team and be able to cover the whole outfield. So I would draft two catchers in addition to Dalton Varsho, for sure. That would be my approach.
Toby's got all the laughs tonight, folks. Watch out. He's feeling it. He's got a sugar rush.
I'm on a roll. That was a joke, by the way. I know. Please do not do that.
The 12th outfielder off the board, ADP of 36, is Randy Arozarena. This is one guy that I target year in and year out. And it's like he hit 263 last year. The average dropped kind of, he always had such a high BABIP, but he hit 274 and everything. So you kind of expected some drop. But again, another 20 homers, 32 steals. The runs, the RBIs are there. He's got that 2020 potential time and time again with maybe even more, especially the stolen base department. Going to play every day. He's one of the few Rays you're pretty confident is going to be out there every single day. And they just let him run. Even when he gets thrown out all the time, they just keep letting him run. It's a beautiful thing with Randy Arozarena for fantasy. That's what we want. And it's like, why would I go for Michael Harris the second when I can go Randy Arozarena a few picks later? Stuff like that. And that's what I was kind of hinting at earlier. There's other profiles that I like more that give me a 2020 base with potential. I love Randy Arozarena. I've loved him every year since he's had that big postseason. Nothing's changing this year for me, Toby. About you?
Yeah, I agree. The spreadsheet likes Arozarena more than it likes Michael Harris the second. I will tell you that much. They are relatively similarly valued, but Arozarena, like you pointed out, is going later on, rank of 40, ADP of 37 at the moment. So Arozarena, yeah, I think the steals are key, like you mentioned before. Pretty gold with the 2020, you're drafting a lot of guys in the first round and you're hoping they go 30-20. And this is a guy that could go 20-30 or has gone 20-30 from where you're drafting him. So I think it's a super interesting profile. It's been consistent. He's got two straight 600 plus plate appearances. I don't see why he would dial it back when it comes to like running or anything like that. So I think it's nice. I think it's really nice. And he's been pretty consistent, like the last 2 years, 8.2% barrel, 7.9% barrel, career 8.3%, Yep. Batting average, 274, 263 in those two full seasons. I just think I think it's really, really solid. I mean, maybe you're leaving a little bit in the runs and RBI just because the environment and the Rays offensively leave a little bit to be desired. So I might not want him leading the line or something like that, but he's really solid.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Randy. Been targeted many, many places for me. The 13th outfielder off the board is Lubob, Luis Robert Jr., Robert Jr. It changes every time someone I look it up. So I'm going to go with Robert Jr. right now. The caveat here is we just talked about it with Tatis and Trout, and it's injuries. We know how talented this guy is, but injuries, injuries, injuries. And it keeps me off of him for now. He's one of those guys, if he ever stayed healthy, could he go 25-25? Maybe. I just don't know if he's ever going to do it right now. So I have no Lubob in my life, and it hurts because I think he's super, super talented. But with an ADP of, you know, 48, and you got other guys going behind him, which I kind of like similarly or a little better, I've just been off Lubob. So what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, he's a really interesting case because, you know, last year we were drafting him in the first round because of what he did towards the back half of, you know, that year, right? 13 homers, six steals, .338 batting average. We knew he wasn't going to hit .394, but he still hit .284. He did have only the 12 home runs, 11 steals last year, but you know, Toby's favorite metric, he has 27 barrels for those 12 homers in one of the most homer friendly parks in all of baseball, you know? So there's a little bit of bad luck there. You know, he stole at a decent clip. He's still 25. He's young. He swings. He puts the ball in play. You can kind of see like the ground ball. I'm interested. Let's see a little bit. Like I'm interested to see what the graph does because the ground ball rate is super high, which tells me, you know, he's probably injured. The spreadsheet does not mind him.
I think he's always injured is a concern. Always hurt.
He is. But again, like, you know, we say that about like so many players and they are until they're not, you know?
Yeah. No. And I love Lubob. I've been a big proponent. I just, man, again, the next two guys we're going to talk about, I'll take over him right now. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He's a tough one. He's a tough one because the profile is juicy. It's really a nice profile because it's got power, it's got speed, and it's got batting average. Like that's the one thing that he's never really, I mean, he did hit .233, but like he's a .289 career batting average guy, you know, 924 plate appearances, .289 batting average, .345 BABIP, you know, which is not necessarily a surprise. The ground ball rate's at 40.7% for his career. It was at 45.1 last year. You know, the plate approach sucks, but I'm trying to dial that back from my analysis because it's like, I think it was Eno who did a recent analysis of like, does O-swing really tell us anything about people? And in 5x5, it doesn't necessarily. Maybe it just tells us that it is not going to put the ball in play as often.
Well, strikeout rates are going up so much. I'd rather worry about the quality of the contact that they do make than the guy swinging them. Unless, like, yeah, you swing them as a ton, you're not going to play anyways. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, and he puts the ball in play a ton. So again, you know, as long as he stays healthy, you know, I think it's fine. And the projections say it's fine. 51 ranked 51st, ADP of 48. So he's -3, but again, and one thing that I think is important to note is we got Randy Arozarena at $21.80, right, at a rank of 40. And like within $2 is Kyle Schwarber at 53, you know? So it's like, it's a very fine line between those guys. And it's kind of like, you know, your risk preference. And maybe that's why you don't draft him is because you say, hey, you know, this similar analysis to Tatis Jr. where like, yeah, he could have an elite season, but you know, there's more, the error bars are wider.
Yeah.
It's
the juice worth the squeeze, and it can be very, very juicy. There's no doubt about it. So like, I don't fault the people for the Lubob. For me, it's just not where I'm going to take my chances at this point in the drafts. But I hope he does well eventually because I drafted him a few times and paid the price, so I'd like to see it pay off for somebody. That'd be good for sure. The 14th outfielder off the board is a guy I'd probably take ahead of Luis Robert is Cedric Mullins. And I know people say, well, he started getting platoon towards the end of the year. He still played 156 games and had 672 at-bats, plate appearances. So even with platoons, he played quite a bit. 16 homers, 34 steals. We expected the power to come down. Hit .258, average dropped a ton. But again, this is a guy that's got, you know, 15, 30, 20, 25, 20, 30 potential at all times, I think. I really do. I love Seth Mullins, and now you're getting him at a better discount compared to last season. So, yeah, I got no problem with some Cedric Mullins. What about you?
Yeah, he's a zero. The spreadsheet is agnostic. It's normally not agnostic, but it is agnostic on Cedric Mullins. Yeah, I think the analysis is spot on that you just did, in the sense that, like, you know, people are saying, oh, well, there's the platoon piece. Well, yeah, he still hit 672 plate appearances. He's got that much in two of the last, you know, the last 2 years. He only hit 16 home runs. So you're like, ah, what a dud. He sucks. But then you're like, oh, well, his home run for fly ball was 7.7%, which is the lowest of his career, right? Yep. He had 24 barrels, you know, 16 home runs. So that's like a reasonable approximation, I think. But you could also make the argument that maybe, you know, given he's really done a number on his ground ball tendencies earlier on in his career, that there's the possibility of that going up. So you have another kind of 20-30 guy. I guess my question for people drafting Michael Harris is, why not wait?
Yep, 100%.
For this guy too, like, yep. Either one, him,
Rosarena, or even the next guy.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
There's a whole slew of guys that have that 2020 potential sitting back here that you can wait a round or two on, if not more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that next guy, the aforementioned Adelis Garcia, has an ADP close to 60 right now. It's like 58, 59, depends on where you look. And I know, like, we were going into last season, it's like, oh, he went 31, 16, 243. Oh, who is this guy? He can't do it. Well, he went out and went 27, 25, and 250 and drove in 101 runs. And kind of looked like he improved a bit, if not stayed the same. Like, you know, the hard hits, the barrels, the max, all this stuff. It went up a little bit, but all in all, very similar profile from what we saw the year before. His strikeout rate dropped 3.5%, which is a plus as well. I love me. I'm buying into Adelis now. It's one of those things I've always said, show me again. Well, he showed me again and showed me very well. And again, why would I take a higher pick on Michael Harris when I can go get a Rosarena or Mullins or Adelis Garcia? So, yeah, this is I'm a big fan of this as well.
Yeah, the spreadsheet does not like Adelis.
Doesn't surprise me.
It does not like Adelis. but, you know, with that being said,
it's because it's the batting averages the projections have, which,
yeah,
they're really downplaying him. That's where you're.
They're low. Yeah. I mean, the one argument I would make on behalf of the projections on the batting average front is, you know, he had the same contact rate in 2022 that he had in 2021 in a similar number of plate appearances, but his K rate was, you know, about 3.5% lower. So if you take out that, if you add a little bit to that K rate, which the projections do in differing amounts, I think that's where you see, you know, the dip in that batting average and him entering the 230 range. I think the challenge is making the argument that there's like a higher ceiling to his batting average, you know, and so maybe that's like, maybe he's hit his upside and there's just downside from here. But as you mentioned, like, he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. He's playing every day. He's fast. He hits for power. You know, he kind of does everything. And it's not like there's any massive glaring weakness outside of his plate discipline, right? But clearly the Rangers, although better, you know, they're willing to throw him out there, you know, in the position that he's at. They've only signed pitchers. They don't have that much better offense, right? So, you know, he is 29. Which is fine. So I think it's fine. I mean, I think you're right. I think they may be a little too skeptical on the batting average, but I think the ceiling may be a little bit capped right there. But again, you know, if he hits his projection, if he hits 233 with 28 home runs and 18 steals, I mean, would you be that sad?
No. And that's a very pessimistic approach, I think, for what he's proven the last couple of years. As he said, like, I'd love to know if your projections or your spreadsheet, if you said, like, if he hit 240 with 28 and 20, like, that, just that little boost would just it would have to, because the batting average is what they're yeah, fighting on there. So,
and maybe the batting average is valuable. I mean, it is the scarcest commodity.
So that's what this is. So, I mean, I knew exactly what it was when you said it doesn't like him, like, it's because the projections hate his batting average. So, it's 100% what it is.
And I think that's one of the things that you have to keep in mind, you know, is each spreadsheet is different and the way that you approach it is different as well. And so if you see a reason why you think a projection may be missing on a given player because of whatever it is, like, I think a better example would be like Mike Trout, where it's like, he's never hit. I mean, he's never hit like lower than like 289 in a reasonably long season recently. And, you know, Steamer has him in the 250s and the bat has him in the high 260s. Now, it's certainly within the realm of possibility, but do I agree that it's his median projection? You know, maybe not. But the projection systems are pretty smart. So, again, you got to think about it. Don't follow your spreadsheet to the T. Like, use some of your judgment. And maybe that's a space where there's, it's an example of where you want to maybe not change the projections, but just kind of factor it in, or look for a similar profile and say, hey, you know, if he actually does what I think he's going to do, which is more, you know, Luis Robert like, then he's ranked 51st, you know,
for sure.
Which is not a good comp at all, because Luis Robert is going to hit a lot higher, but you know what I'm saying?
For sure. All right. That wraps up our top 15 discussion for this episode. We'll do a little longer shots here. We'll each do two from ADP 200 to 300. And I love Toby's first one here. I've been drafting him everywhere. So what do you got on your first one?
Yeah, so for pick number one, I'm going to go with Ramon Laureano. He's a frequent guest on my teams. Laureano right now, according to the spreadsheet, you know, he's about a $10 player, which ranks him in at about 165, but he's going at an ADP of 232. He's clearly going to play every day, which he couldn't play every day last year because he was suspended. There's obviously some injury challenges. I think, you know, the batting average was supremely low last year. He did struggle a little bit with contact, but he also didn't have, you know, a full spring training. The BABIP was a career low, career 311. He was at 262. So you can see the room for growth right there. But even with a 233 batting average, which is certainly possible for him, but I would say, you know, I would take the over if I was taking something, you know, getting that with, you know, the bad X projection is 20 homers, 14 steals. The A's are going to be bad. You know, maybe he'll get traded somewhere good, but even with that, he's still, I think, a really nice value going where he's going. So that was the number one guy that I wanted to kind of highlight. It's a 67 pick difference between what he's ranked in the spreadsheet and what he is going for.
Yep, I like that one quite a bit. The first one I'll mention is Andrew Benintendi, ADP around 219. Gets a new home in Chicago, and that is going to be much, much to his liking, I believe. Last year, only 5 home runs, 8 stolen bases. Really never got clicking in the power department. It was hit 304. More importantly, the best strikeout rate of his career, 14.8. And he still walked over 10%, which was good to see. But Max EV was the best of his career. He had 5.1% barrel rate, which is kind of normal for him. And you mentioned, like, you know, 5 home runs on 20 barrels, something's got to give. And a lot of that was the ground ball rate went up to 43% when the fly ball rate dropped to 34, which led to a 3.8% home run to fly ball, which is way below his career norm. So put him in a better ballpark, hopefully reverting a little bit back to what we saw before. You know, the projections got Benny hitting, you know, 14 home runs, 10 steals, 260. I think that's a decent floor for him. This is a guy who used to steal 20 bags in a couple back-to-back seasons in 17 and 18. He showcased his highest 20 home runs. You know, 14 and 10 is pretty good. You never know. Maybe he clocks in the 15, 16 homers and gets closer to 15 steals. Right? There's at least upside with that after the pick 200, which I like a lot in that Chicago White Sox lineup and that ballpark. So Benintendi would be a guy that I'd have circled later, especially if you need some steals at that point in the draft. Who's your next guy?
My next guy is, and the spreadsheet likes Benintendi as well. Ranked 211, ADP at 220. My next guy is Randall Grichuk. And Grichuk, I'm going to go with Grichuk for a couple of reasons. Number one, the spreadsheet likes him. He's like ranked 220th and he's going around pick 260, I think. But another thing that I think is interesting, is that he is going to the same lab that designed the bat for Arenado and Goldie and a couple other big leaguers. Grichuk, there was an article that he went to that same place. And so, you know, I am sometimes, especially like if a guy already looks good, you know, thinking about what he's done in the past with the power potential, the value of homers being in cores. I like that. So I think Grichuk is a nice little guy going where he's going.
Can't you'd imagine that'd be better than last year. That's for sure. The guy I'll mention, we mentioned him on the First Base podcast. That's Will Myers, ADP at 265, going to Great American Small Park. Going to get the main run in the outfield for the most part. You know, he had 7 homers and 2 steals last year, which is a guy that's usually getting your 15 plus homers. He still has double digit steal capabilities in him. If not, I'm getting 5 to 10 is reasonable, but the power will be there. You know, hit 240, 250 in a very, very, very hitter friendly ballpark, as we know. Like the Bad X has him for 16-6 at 240. It could be it. Maybe he's broken, but I think there's still a lot to like with Will Myers. You know, 7.3% barrel. The max EV was great last year. I think there's room to go up for Will Myers. I might be overestimated. Maybe I'm overplaying Great American Small Park, but that is a phenomenal adjustment from Petco Park to Cincinnati. So I'll take a chance at Will Myers, especially with that first base outfield eligibility. I love a lot. So I think at around 260-ish, I think it's a pick I like to make. Post 300 ADP, Toby, we got 2 guys each. Who do you got for your first one?
Yeah. And by the way, I don't know what happened, but my video has disappeared. I can no longer see you.
Oh, I can see you though. So you still look good.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good deal. I'm not going to press anything that might jeopardize things. Oh, I figured it out. It opened me in a different tab.
Gotcha.
When I was jumping around there.
The spreadsheet was angry.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to go with a Will Myers teammate here. I'm going to go with one of the guys I really loved having on my team towards the end of last year, which is Jake Fraley. There's always the possibility of a platoon with Fraley. I mean, let's be honest, that's probably going to happen. So you've got to understand that when drafting him. But, you know, his ADP is after pick 300, as you mentioned before. I've got him 248th in the spreadsheet. So that's a value of about 58 picks. The projections have him doing that in fewer than 500 plate appearances as well. Bad X has him at 15 homers, 13 steals. Steamer has him at 18-9. Batting average is not, you know, tremendous necessarily, but one of the things that I really like about him is just the plate skills are really good. Like the O swing has been low throughout his career, 24.7 for his career. You know, the contact rate is better than league average throughout his career. It was better than, you know, pretty much any point in time in his career at 76.2% last year. You know, so that's all really good. So you've got good plate discipline, you've got good contact skills. You know, the barrel rate at 7.3%, you know, while not outrageous, is really solid. You know, 12 home runs on 12 barrels. So he's very high there, but he also, you have to factor in kind of the context of Great American Small Park. And that's the best home run hitters park in all of baseball potentially. And so, I really like Jake Fraley. You know, the challenge being kind of navigating the ins and outs of the potential platoon there, but you know, why not give him a shot? Why not give him a shot?
Yeah. We saw it last year when he played pretty much every day. Very, very valuable. For me, I'll go with Manuel Margot, as it likes to be called now, ADP of 311. It's always been a stay healthy playing time situation. And right now, the way the Rays roster is built, looks like he might not be getting platooned. This might be his gig. And with Manny Margot, again, only 28, which is kind of surprising. I feel like he's been playing forever. When he plays at least 120 games, he's had double digit homers in 3 out of 4 years and double digit steals in every season. Like he runs and runs and runs. The Bad X has him for 128 games, 12 homers, 16 steals, hitting 250. Usually has a, you know, 250 to 260 average, give or take, at 274 last year in a small sample. But what I love about him is, you know, the chance to get double digit homers, double digit steals on the Rays there. He's like a, you know, poor man's Rosarena back there, like really poor man's, but you get the power, you get the speed at ADP past 300. We've always known Manny's got that. And, you know, at that point in the draft to get a guy with double digit power and speed, I'm a big fan of. So he's a guy, if you're looking for depth, you're just looking for some steals or something you're short on. I like Manny Margot, where he's going at ADP 311. Who's your
the spreadsheet person? Loves that pick. Yeah. Bubba.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Loves it. 84 pick value.
Ooh, I like it. See, look at that. Every once in a while, folks, I got to figure it out.
Oh, you have it all figured out all the time. He's like going at ADP of 315, and he's, what is it? Where did he go? 315, 230, 231 for his rank.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Good call there. The second one that I'm going to go with is Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone Taylor is 309th ranking in the spreadsheet, 414 in terms of his ADP. I'm not convinced that there's a super high ceiling with Turner, or Tyrone Taylor, but I think he does get a shot there. They did just sign Brian Anderson, which I kind of dig, actually. I'm kind of into that. I could have switched this over to Brian Anderson maybe a little bit. But, you know, Taylor, they've got him. The projections have him at about 500 plate appearances, you know, hitting 20 home runs, stealing five bases, you know, playing, you know, a good chunk of the minutes there. And so, again, you know, he's got a little bit of pop, 9.9% barrel rate, 9% over the course of his career. So you can easily see him hitting 20, 25 home runs in a season with a little bit of steals. The batting average is probably going to hurt you, but where you're drafting him, I think it's a really solid pick. Uh-oh. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got some bad news. Bubba appears to have disappeared from the podcast. I'm not sure what's happened. I'm going to text him, check up on him. While we're doing that, I got a couple questions. I got a couple questions after the last show about the spreadsheet that I'm talking about. So I just wanted to put a plug out there for Tanner Bell. Some of you may know him as at Smart Fantasy BB on Twitter. Tanner has a spreadsheet. He has an SGP spreadsheet where you import the projections and it can get you some values. And it's an incredible tool, really revolutionized the way I play the game. And I think it's incredibly beneficial. So if you go to smartfantasybaseball.com, you can purchase it. It's well worth the price of admission. Would highly recommend that. So if you're interested in translating these projections into a dollar value, that's a really good way to do it. There's a lot of different ways. Like, everybody has a different way of doing that. You know, so whether it's, he also has a projection aggregator. So you plug in the projections, however many, up to five, and you add those in, and it spits out the meta projection for all those. Bubba's telling me, he says, keep going, Toby. My computer is acting up. I would highly recommend that. Again, it's at, let me just double check the URL. It's, smartfantasybaseball.com is the spreadsheet where you can get your very own spreadsheet, care of Tanner Bell, but well worth it. Highly recommend it. I was just giving a little shout out to the spreadsheet.
I just got the new edition of The Process in the mail today, actually.
Really? So, yeah. I got it a little bit ago as well. I you want to know something? I have not read The Process or The Baseball Forecaster yet.
You were taking it real slow this year. I respect it.
I'm really taking it slow. I'm trying not to develop any biases. I should read The Process. It's also because I've been reading a lot of fiction. And so you have to balance, you know, reading books and, you have to balance reading like books and reading fantasy baseball books.
Yeah, I get it. I need to just read, period. That'd be a good start for me. You like Tyrone Taylor. We always love Tyrone Taylor. So I can support that
for sure.
The guy I'll mention, and I know his ADP will keep climbing, but an ADP of 430 would be Andrew McCutchen. And I'm just, the biggest reason I love him, it's because it's Kutch. He came back to Pittsburgh, which I was a big fan of. And they're going to keep playing him because why wouldn't they play him? He at least play 130-ish games, I'd imagine. You know, the bad deck has him for 125, 17 homers, 8 steals, 247. He still had 17 homers and still 8 bags in 134 games last year. The batting average has deteriorated the last couple of years, but the power has been still a bit okay. He steals a few bags. And the fact he's going to play nearly every, like, we talk about accumulating at bats. A guy with those kind of at bat skills past pick 400, I'm a big fan of. The only reason I don't see him playing is if he gets hurt. Or some magic way the Pirates decide, hey, he's going to be a mentor, which I don't see happening. So I love Kutch at that point in time. You're just looking for at-bats, and I'd have him circled late in the drafts. All right. Ready to do some listener questions here before we head on out?
Yeah, we got some really great listener questions.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's do them. Let me pull them up here.
Smart people. And
thanks for making it happen, people. We'll start with our buddy Willie G, Willie Garofalo. Is outfield as shallow as some people make it out to be? Will you be making an adjustment to attack the position before a certain point in the draft? What are your thoughts? Like, we kind of hit on that earlier. I think the elite talent obviously drops off quickly, but you found the value, it seems like, later on.
Yeah, I think there's value later on. I mean, I think the genesis of this question in general, it's just kind of like, you know, what I'm trying to change a little bit in my approach, and one of the reasons why I haven't been involved in a lot of drafts recently, is I think that we fall into these kind of, it could go either way, right? We familiarize ourselves on one side. I'm familiarizing myself with the player pool. And then I think on the other side, there's like, you know, like anything that we do repeatedly, we develop these like, you know, not to get too deep, but we develop these neural pathways, right? We develop these habits biases, but also like, okay, I'm in this situation, I'm going to grab this player, or I'm in this situation, I'm going to go grab this player. I can choose one of these three players, right? And I think it removes a lot of the flexibility and like the broader kind of view in some respects. And so what I'm trying to do is really focus on that relative value piece. Right. Because if I'm not drafting an early, if you draft an early outfielder, maybe you're not getting an early shortstop.
Yep.
If you don't draft this, you know, so it's all like, the question is, who are the best players you can put together that create a balanced team if you're playing in for an overall, you know? And so that's really the focus. And so where your weakest elements are, I could have four totally shit outfielders, you know, they're totally shit. But my infield is made up of gods. You know what I'm saying? So like, if that's the case, then it's totally okay. You know, well, and that's just the way that the season runs. And maybe then I'm like, okay, in Fab, I'm really trying to look out early in the season for guys who are higher up in the lineup or have showing some sort of skill or taking a chance on this guy. So I just think that like, you know, the focus on you know, getting these guys early here. What I'm more concerned about is if I see a position where there's like no value, where it's like, what I want to see is some pockets of green and I want to see some pockets of red. So like, for those of you unfamiliar with conditional formatting, red being bad, green being good. So I want to see some green outfielders that I can target, and I want to see some red outfielders, which means that other people are making mistakes. What I do not want to see is like a Cedric Mullins, where it's like they're agnostic, where everybody's agnostic. There's just a zero. There's no opportunity for value there, and there's no mistakes that are being made, you know? And again, like, of course I'm kidding around, but I mean, like, I want to see some of those dark greens or those darker greens, which again, with conditional formatting means a better pick, you know? And so it's like, when I look at it's like anytime you look at the top end of a draft, you see a lot of yellow, and that's because these guys are expensive and it's hard to meet that projection, you know? And so again, you know, I want to see where there's green higher up there, but you know, but not like with the same risk as like Fernando Tatis Jr. And so you're probably not going to get somebody. So get a guy that helps you build your team, you know?
Well, yeah. And it goes back to the thing I've been trying to say a lot, and other people have too, is, like, we talk about positional scarcity, but it's more like just build your team, like you said. Like, look at the statistics in the end. It doesn't matter who plays what position. It's the grand scheme of things. So that's kind of what Toby's talking about with the outfield. Like, I don't have to take a guy early. If I can get X, Y, and Z and still be okay later on, we're good. So makes a ton of sense. He also asks, Which outfielder is the ice cream cake of outfielders?
Oh, the ice cream cake of outfielders. That's a really good question. That's an excellent question. In my heart or like on the spreadsheet, you know?
Yeah, whichever you prefer.
I would say in my heart, you know, because I'm a masochist, is probably Kyle Tucker. Not because the projection says that he's super good, but I just think the guy's good. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm with you.
I just think he's really good. The skills are good. Like, just seeing him, I don't know if anybody else read the article he had where he talked about he ate Captain Crunch before every game.
Yeah.
Something like that, where he was like, yeah, I was really struggling, and then I started eating Captain Crunch. Mm-hmm. And then I did really well, and so I'm still eating Captain Crunch. Like, that's the type of player that I want.
Toby can respect that.
I can respect that. I can respect that a lot. I'll leave it there.
Okay. Jenny Butler has a question for us here. Maybe this is a better question for part two. No, this works perfect right now. If you're looking for late outfielders past the cliff, what kind of guys are you targeting? Platoon guys, guys who have underperformed and need to make a change, young upside guys, old boring guys. What's the type of player you're targeting later in drafts? Like I mentioned earlier, like Manny Margot and Kutch, these guys are getting at bats. They're getting playing time. They might be boring, but that's what I want. I'm not opposed to taking chances. Just when I'm getting late in the draft, that's what I'm going for. So what are you looking for back there?
I think it's a great question. I think there's a couple routes you can go. I think, like you mentioned, there's the boring veteran route. Right, without much ceiling, but consistent, maybe underperforming. Well, I think there's really three profiles. The second one would be guy who has underperformed or been injured, but we know can ball, like if everything goes right. You know, this is a bad example, but like, you know, a Javi Baez or something like that, where it's like last year he was going at pick 65, this year he's going at 165. Has that really changed that dramatically, that type of player, which, you know, honestly, like you don't see that late on. But I think that the type of player that I'm going to try to look for probably this year is power speed combo guys. I'm looking for the guys at that point, it's all a crapshoot, you know, later on, like pick 300 plus, even 250 plus. I mean, what percentage of those guys are really staying on your team the whole season? Yeah. And so I want to try for some of these higher upside guys where if I get lucky, you know, and that happens every year where like a guy starts off just blazing hot, doesn't deserve it, but he gets lucky. Right. But there's only certain types of guys that can do that, you know? And so, you know, I may throw batting average in there too, but maybe somebody that can contribute two of those three scarce categories, you know, in like a meaningful way. So like Laureano is a really good example where he's been really good before, you know, he struggled last year and he had fewer plate appearances because he was injured. But, you know, we know he's got power. We know he's got speed and he has hit for average. So he kind of gets like maybe all three of those, you know? Let's see. Who's another example? Abisail Garcia, right?
Yep.
Crappy last year. I wanted him on all my teams. I got him on a bunch of teams. He sucks, but you know, he's also going at pick 320 this year, right? Versus 218. Is anything all that different? Was last year injuries? Was it lack of preparation? What was it? You know, Lane Thomas, you know,
We got a question on
Lane Thomas. Yeah. Manny Margot, Jake Fraley, you know, like guys like that, where it's like they're providing the upside, you know, because I think, you know, theoretically I'm trying earlier on to get guys that I feel better about and more comfortable with, that those are guys who are going to provide the core. And so the difference between me finishing like third or fourth in a league versus winning a league is maybe one of those guys hitting, you know, whereas if I go a little bit more conservative in that route, you know, maybe I'm just going for plate appearances or, you know, whatever it is, then maybe, just maybe, you know, you don't get the same, you know, you don't get the same opportunity. I mean, it's all risk reward, but I think when that risk is very low and there's not anything meaningfully different between that player and somebody on the wire, then I think those are the types of shots that I want to take later on. probably.
All right, a couple questions here on the YouTube chat, then we'll get back. Jimmy D says he's bullish on the Angels. Do you think Jared Walton, your Shell, can be solid this year? I've written up your Shell in a few places. I love him for a late-round batting average asset at third base. I think there's a lot to like there. He might even gain shortstop eligibility at some point this season, which gives you MI and CI. Does he light the world on fire? No, but he could probably get you 10 to 15 homers if he gets going and get you a really good average and a very good Angels lineup. So I'm with the Urshela hype. Walsh, I'm still nervous about. That decline last year was pretty dramatic and scary. You're not paying a premium for him now, which is kind of what Toby was saying with the outfield stuff, which, you know, if he gets even close to what he was or halfway back to what he was before, it could be nice. But I'm not really in on Walsh, but I do like Urshela. Do you have a thought on either one of those guys, Toby?
Not really. Yeah. I'm not a fan of either one, I don't think.
And then Ryan Turner was just echoing what you said. Amen to that. I typically expect 0 to 10 steals from first, third, corner, infield. Cherry picked an example in 10 seconds. Thought that it isn't possible ADP-wise, but if I have J-Ram, Witt, and Freeman, then now my infield and outfield favorite targets change. So basically what Toby was saying, like, you can adapt based on how you build your team. It's not just a you have to get certain positions with certain productions, basically. Wake Up asks, update on Pocket Aces. Are you planning on doing it this year?
Maybe. I mean, we'll see. I have not drafted yet. I probably will not draft until February at the earliest, probably late February, I would guess. When I look at the board here, let me open up the spreadsheet here. When I look at the board, there's a lot of feelings. I get a lot of feelings. You know, right now, or if I were to approach it, maybe I still might. I mean, the thing I think where I went maybe a little wrong last year is I started a lot of my leagues with four straight pitchers or three straight pitchers. And I'm not quite sure that I'm going to do that again. That's still going to be pitching heavy approach probably, but that I probably will not do again. So I think it'll depend on where different players fall. If things stay the same and I can get, you know, Garrett Cole and Corbin Burns, at, you know, in the first and second round, then I'll probably do that. If I can't and I wait until the back end of the round and I get a Woodruff or a Nola to partner with somebody and then I get like JTR or something like that, then, you know, that's totally cool too. So yeah, I still think it's on the table. I still think it's on the table. Whether I'll go there, I'm not sure. And then there's also the elite relievers, which I think are also on the table as well in that spot. So, you know, I did a podcast with James Anderson. So if you're interested in my take on it more broadly, the RotoWire podcast with James Anderson, I go into more detail on kind of Pocket Aces and my thoughts on pitching this year. But the market's also shifting. It's already changing. Pitchers are getting pushed up. You know, so a lot of what was, I don't think it'll be back to what it was last year in terms of like how high pitchers are going. But I think you're going to see a big scrunch there in the second round.
Yep. Our buddy Ben Tidd asks, do you see yourselves being okay with drafting some of the riskier unproven guys like Harris, Robert, Adelise, and Carroll because of the perceived lack of depth in the later rounds? I think we kind of went over three of those for sure. I think we're both kind of out on Harris. Toby's at least interested in Luis Robert. I think we both like Adelise. We'll get to Corbin Carroll next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the spreadsheet does not like Corbin Carroll.
Yeah. That's why I'm saving it for next week because Will Garofalo gave a glowing explanation of Carroll on an episode or two ago of Bench with Bubba, but still a tough one for me. Cujo Jones, Curtis Jones says, good question about Jenny's question earlier. Thoughts on a guy who burned me last year, who again is penciled into the leadoff spot. Talking about Lane Thomas, of course. So we'll start with Lane Thomas. So what's your thoughts? I kind of stopped you to talk about him earlier. ADP of 276. And I know you were in and I think you were in on him last year, in and out on him at some points last year. So what's your thoughts on Lane Thomas?
Yeah, I was in and out on Thomas, but he really benefited me towards the back end of last year. If you had him at the end of last year, he's quite a guy to have on your team at that point in time. I think a lot of his steals and a handful of those home runs came in the last month of the season. So, yeah, I think he's a really good example. I already mentioned him before, but I think that he's a guy where, again, you know, he's hitting at the top of the lineup. He is stealing bases. There's not a lot of competition there, and he's played pretty well. You know, like even last year, bit of a dud, but 548 plate appearances, 241, 17 homers, 8 steals. You know, that's a very reasonable production from where he's going in the draft. So part of it is tempering our own expectations of what players are going to provide. But then I think it's also like just getting lucky in terms of when you have them on your team. But I think Thomas is a nice target this year.
For sure. His other part of the question was interested in your thoughts on the D-backs. We'll hit that next episode because we have about 3 of them I think we'll be talking about. So we'll get into some D-backs talk next week for sure, Mr. Cujo. Last question we have here, Toby, from Steve Brunn. Who's playing left field for the Yankees on opening day? This is a fun question because Roster Resource has Oswaldo Cabrera. Aaron Hicks is still around. You never know. DJ LeMahieu might find his way out there. There's a lot of weird moving parts, and maybe the Yankees aren't even done yet. So that's a tough, tough one for me to answer right now.
Who plays left field for the Yankees?
Yeah, on opening day.
Oof.
It's a mess right now.
Tommy Pham, that would be beautiful.
That would make sense, actually.
I would love that. Oh, my God. That would be great.
Yep. So it's a tough one. I think they go and make another move. Let's put it that way. I don't think it's anybody on the roster right now. That's what I foresee happening. Could be wrong, but I think there's going to be another addition in the Bronx before that's all said and done. And hey, as much as you don't want to see it, maybe Giancarlo's out there and they get someone else to DH. That would be a nightmare, but an option nonetheless. All right, Toby, that'll wrap us up for our outfield preview part one. Any final thoughts before we get to 16 through 30 and some more depth next week?
No, a lot of fun as usual. Thanks for all the great questions. I know you can tell we're getting into kind of draft season now with increasing questions, but really appreciate that. Thanks everybody for listening. And yeah, let's roll on to outfield episode part two.
Yep, it'll be coming at you guys again next Tuesday night as you guys want to watch it live or download it Wednesday morning, whichever you prefer. But as usual, find Toby on the Twitter there at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BDentric. This was Ben or Bubba and the BatFlip episode 143. Thanks for listening, everybody. Catch you guys next time.
For a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season, test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.